today is a very good day to ask the time-honored question adults ask children. What do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? Anybody willing to offer their youthful answer when you were 8 or 11? Roshni. Peter Pan. Any other Peter Pans? Yes, please. To be like your dad? Lovely. Lovely. Chris. A fireman. An architect. Let me ask Cole's older brother, Logan. Logan, what do you want to be when you grow up? Lawyer. So today, mommy wins. Daddy, your turn will be tomorrow. Yeah. Well, I was hoping, kind of hoping beyond hope, that someone would say a saint. I wanted to be a saint when I grow up. Now, I know that's probably extremely rare. But once in my life, I have heard someone say that, and she's sitting right here in the front pew. So, true story. When Sarah was confirmed by Archbishop Terry Finley, just down the street at St. Thomas's Huron, Terry gathered everyone in the chapel in the basement, the St. Agnes Chapel, and he gave them a little pep talk. He told them what he expected from them once they were confirmed and growing into more mature discipleship. So he asked them to be lights in the world. And he asked them to come to church regularly, if not every Sunday, as frequently as they could. He told them that they should read the Bible and read it again and again. Them to pray. And he told them that he expected them to tithe. And Sarah, who's always had a keen analytic mind, said, "And that means you have to raise my allowance, because otherwise my net won't be the same." A few days after the confirmation, she astonished me by coming down the stairs and saying, "Mom, guess what? I know what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a saint." Her husband's laughing. I didn't laugh, but I was so astonished and also so busy, having just come in from work and probably stirring something on the stove, that I gave her a very lame response. I think I said something like, "Oh yeah, that's nice, dear." Several days later, after I had thought of a much better response, the moment had passed and her aspiration with it. But I was very inspired by my daughter saying that, and I've given it a lot of thought over the years. And I wish I had said to you, "Sarah, that makes absolute sense, because what you were doing in your confirmation service was taking on the baptismal vows that someone else had made for you as a baby and making them your own. And so wanting to be a saint is absolutely all about your baptismal promises." So today I'd like to share with you and with this whole congregation the 8 things I've learned about these holy children, women, and men. And my memory isn't as good as that of the saints, so I'm going to go back to my notes. Number 1, the saints when the going got really tough in order to save his own skin. But this most ordinary of men and this great sinner becomes the rock on which the church is built. St. Peter becomes the first bishop of Rome. And just as Jesus had predicted, when Peter turns, he strengthens all of his friends. So that little band of disciples changes the face of the earth. And then there's St. Paul, the first theologian of the church, but who, in his own words, declared himself to be the worst sinner of all. Before meeting the risen Christ on the road to Damascus, he was hell-bent on finding, persecuting, and killing every Christian he could lay his hands on. Today, we would label that religious genocide. But meeting Christ on that road so turns him around that he becomes equally passionate about preaching the love of God to the ends of the earth, a reckless mission which cost him his own life. Number two, the saints are full of grace. Their hearts and minds and souls are overflowing with the experience of having been forgiven, restored, cherished, and accepted. They are awestruck by the gift of God's loving, unmerited favor. They are awestruck and they are profoundly grateful. Like John Newton, that hideous sinner who participated in the Atlantic slave trade, they know that grace is amazing and sweet. It has saved them. It has opened their eyes. It has searched for them when they were lost and brought them home. And the power of this grace in their lives is the foundation for everything they do that is saintly. That grace is like a mighty river flowing from God through them to the entire world. Number three, the saints speak God. In everything they say, in everything they do, they speak of and about God. In fact, they're so crazy about their friendship with God that they never stop thinking and speaking about her. Francis de Sales, that great saint of the 16th century, once said that if they could, the saints would be like lovers who, when passing a giant oak tree, could not carve the name of their beloved on the bark of that tree. And the saints, he said, cannot stop engraving the heart of Christ, the love of Christ, on the hearts of every human being. The saints have done this brilliantly and passionately. They've written poems and volumes of theology. But they also know that it's not just about words. St. Francis of Assisi said, "Preach at all times, and if necessary, use words." And it was Francis who created the first Christmas crash, so that ordinary people without sophistication or education could know when they looked at that scene what it was all about and what it meant. Number four, the saints this community and for the whole of creation. It includes the great Thanksgiving, remembering our salvation in the death and resurrection of Jesus. It includes the Feast of Bread and Wine. And most especially, it includes hanging out with other mistake-prone people. Hanging out with people that you haven't necessarily chosen, but who show up just like you do. It's the school we call church. And one cannot be a saint without it, because saints are made in community. Number five, the saints have day jobs. They are fisher people, they work for CRA, they are soldiers and they are physicians. They are writers and actors and poets and teachers, and they are scientists. They are theologians and preachers. They are queens and princesses, kings and princes. They are deans of great universities and great cathedrals. They are business people, architects, painters, musicians, and composers. But then there's my personal favorite. They are lawyers. You laugh. Someone at 9:30 said, "I want the proof this afternoon." Because I said I had Googled it, and I actually found lawyers, saints, of whom I had never heard. But we all know of Sir Thomas More. Francis de Sales was a saint and a lawyer. And John Donne was a poet, lawyer, and priest. The saints live these ordinary lives in extraordinarily loving ways. Number six, they see the world, they look at the world with and through the eyes of God. They share something of the divine imagination. In other words, they look at the world and they see both how its goodness has been marred and also how it can be repaired. They're dreamers. Dreamers who say no to injustice and yes to more godlike portraits of today and tomorrow. They see how it will be when the kingdom of God comes on this earth. Saintly Albanian woman looks at the poor and dying in the gutters of the streets of Calcutta, and she says, "No. I will take them in. I will build houses and hospitals for them. This cannot be. I have a dream," another 20th century saint said. "I have a dream that someday my four little children will live in a nation that does not judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." The saints dream large. Number seven, saints are not couch potatoes. They do whatever they can to make this godlike vision they have a living reality. And number eight, and driving.